I'm joined by Human Rights Watch's Oli Zulvang, who's just come back from Aleppo and compiled this report on abuses by rebels in the area. Oli, can you just give us an overview of what you found, first of all?
Well, so we spent most of August month in Turkey and Syria, and we were looking at two things. One of the issues that we looked at was aerial attacks by government forces, and the other thing that other issue we looked at was abuses by the FSA, by the Free Syrian Army, the opposition forces. We managed to interview about 12 detainees in FSA custody in private, and what they told us, about half of them told us that they had been beaten, they had been kicked, they had been tortured or otherwise ill-treated while they were in custody. And in most of these cases, most of the beating had taken place early in detention, meaning that as they were being detained, but we also documented cases where people were beaten, particularly on the soles of their feet, also later in the detention after they had been transferred to more established prisons in the area.
How did you manage to get
one of our findings?
Yeah, just before you get on to the other finding, how did you get access to those people?
Well, we have we approached the opposition authorities in these areas, and in most cases, in most of these towns, the opposition authorities, the Free Syrian Army, agreed to allow us to meet and interview detainees in private. In one town in particular, they refused. They didn't want us to meet the prisoners. And of course, we are concerned about how the prisoners are treated in that prison. But in most cases, the opposition authorities were accommodating and allowed us to interview these detainees in private. We then, of course, also raised this issue with the opposition authorities after we had conducted these interviews. And in several cases, opposition authorities said that they would take steps to ensure that there was no ill treatment, that there was no torture going forward.
And the other finding was about extrajudicial killings, right?
Exactly. I think perhaps what is equally concerning from our point of view are the reports that we're getting about extrajudicial and summary executions. While we were in Aleppo, we documented more than a dozen cases like this. And in one case, for example, which happened while we were there, FSA fighters in Aleppo City, they detained several members of a family whom they accused of being Shabia, pro-government militia, and they executed them. And there was a YouTube video that was circulated showing the execution. We spoke to two opposition leaders who confirmed this execution, but they also said that there had been a trial beforehand, that a local judicial council had sentenced the four men to death. Of course, the way that this was, the way that this happened, there is no way that there could have been any kind of fair trial. So these were summary executions and very serious violations of international humanitarian law.
Last month, we and others reported that a number of commanders and rebel units had signed up to some form of sort of human rights compact, whereby they agreed to respect the rights of detainees. You know, what's happened to that initiative?
Exactly. There are actually several initiatives like this ongoing, where rebel commanders, opposition authorities are asked to sign or pledge their commitment to both human rights law and also international humanitarian law, the laws of war. This is, of course, a positive step and something that we encourage. The important thing, however, is how these pledges, how these commitments are being respected on the ground. And for us, it is extremely important that this just not become a rhetorical statement or something that the opposition leaders do to improve their image or vis-a-vis the Western country, for example, but they actually respect these rights and on the ground as well. One of the important things that we pressed with the opposition leaders was that there has to be some sort of accountability. If they do get reports about abuses, torture, or executions, they need to take steps. They need to send strong signals that this is unacceptable, and they may have to make sure that those who are responsible for these very serious crimes are held accountable in some way.
The document that I saw had very few, if any, signatories from Aleppo. Did you get any sense that Aleppo was particularly resistant to such initiatives?
You know, it's very hard to compare different regions in Syria at the moment, and that is because there's such an unequal level of access. I think there is a lot of focus on Aleppo right now because it is easier for us and for journalists to go there and to see what is going on. But partly, of course, Aleppo and Idlib and some of the northern governorates are also receiving a lot of attention because that is where the opposition has perhaps come the furthest in terms of controlling territory, starting to set up their own systems, their own sort of parallel systems of governance. So in some ways, it's an early indication, perhaps, of what we might see in other places of the country as well. I don't think Aleppo is particularly bad in any way, but I think it is incredibly important that all opposition leaders take these issues very seriously, and that they that the governance structures that they set up, that they set them up correctly from the very beginning. We are concerned about abuses by opposition forces going forward, and getting this right from the start would be incredibly important.
Is this a source of friction between rebel commanders?
That is absolutely true, and of course this is something that makes it harder for us to establish accountability and responsibility for the violations that are being committed by, for example, low-ranking FSA fighters. It is a problem that neither the civilian nor the military opposition is united. And we've seen that just in the last week, that there have been new military groups, military formations being announced. And this makes it more difficult to establish responsibility and accountability. Nonetheless, I think we do see, and we saw definitely in Aleppo, a level of organization, a level of structure that means that the commanders, there might be several commanders, but that the commanders are able to control their forces to a significant extent. And that means also that the commanders are responsible for what their forces do on the ground. And that is why it is important, it was important for us to publish these findings today, but also important why it is important for commanders in particular to take responsibility to make sure that the correct orders are being sent to the FSA fighters, and to make sure that they do react when they get reports about violations and abuses.
Now, are these abuses a question of rogue elements at lower levels not obeying orders, or are there commanders that endorse such behavior?
I think there's an element of both. I think what we were most concerned about were the cases when we felt that the abuses that we documented had been either condoned or at the very least tolerated from commanders and opposition leaders. And that this applied particularly to a couple of issues. One was the treatment of detainees. One of the most common torture methods that we documented in Aleppo in particular, but we've documented it in other places as well, was beating on the soles of the feet. And when we confronted opposition leaders with this, they said that, they had been given orders to not ill-treat, to not torture detainees, but they had also indicated that it was permissible to beat detainees on the soles of the feet, and one of the explanations for this was that it didn't cause any injuries. This is torture. This is deliberate infliction of pain. and it is impermissible. And some of them agreed with that. Once we sat down and explained it to them, they agreed and promised to send out new instructions. So we really hope that that will happen. A second issue that we were concerned about were executions. When we confronted opposition leaders with the number of with documented executions, they would say that they didn't allow it, but at the same time they indicated that, you know, they felt that those who killed should be killed, and they would also try to justify some of these executions by saying that it was only the worst criminals who were being executed. And this is, of course, extremely worrying if this is the signal that is being sent to the FSA fighters, to the ground forces, that it is tolerated to commit executions like this. And that is, of course, completely unacceptable, and all opposition leaders should send strong signals about that.
Has Human Rights Watch come under any pressure to keep quiet about this kind of thing and concentrate on greater abuses by the regime?
I mean, I wouldn't say that we have come under pressure, but I mean, we've heard sometimes that, you know, why are you reporting on what some people consider to be fairly minor or infrequent or single incidents when the government is committing so widespread and systematic abuses? And for us, frankly, this is not an argument. Any violation and any execution, any incident of use of torture is a human rights violation, and we will report on that no matter whether it is the government that commits these violations or abuses, or whether it is the opposition forces.
Is there a danger that you sort of contribute to some kind of narrative that people think, oh well, they're both as bad as each other, and just sort of shrug their shoulders?
I think that there is, you know, we're always faced with the danger that people will misuse the information that we put out. You know, we see this with sometimes with the government, with the reporting that we do on government violations. We sometimes see this on the reporting we do on FSA abuses. But for us, it is extremely important to report the violations on the ground as we see them and as we document them. And I think that we're only going to able to address these abuses if we have a solid basis of information upon which to discuss and upon which to discuss accountability and how to better address them. So this is something that we will continue doing no matter what people argue against that.
And this report comes at a time when a lot of Western nations, Britain included, are backing rebel groups and with the communication equipments and training. What's your message to Western governments?
Well, I think they have to, first of all, I think that the countries that do provide support to the opposition, they have particular leverage also with the opposition, and with particular leverage also comes particular responsibility to raise these issues with the opposition groups that they are supporting, to make sure that the groups that they are supporting are do respect human rights and international humanitarian law. I should also say, to make sure that, you know, we had a constructive dialogue with many opposition leaders. There are many opposition leaders who want to get this right, and I think that's what we all need to build upon, to make sure that the right signals are being sent, that the right messages are being received, and to make sure that any support also comes with a message saying that, you know, we expect you to also strictly comply with human rights and international humanitarian law.
Okay, Ali, thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you.